Okay, there's a few things that I want to share with you, and I'd love to, if I can do this fast enough, have time for just questions just with us. And if I don't, we'll wait till the other section. Okay. I want to hear the girls, huh? Okay.
You've got my apartment. You've got mine. If you give my notes to the girls, you're in trouble. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye.
Have fun. Okay. I've got a couple of categories here that I'd like to tell you, and some of the things I'm going to get real nervy. I've got a series of four talks I give to wives, and the first one is entitled How to Understand Your Man. And a lot of it is really more applicable to wives, but I'm going to give you the basic ideas because the thought occurred to me the other day as I was thinking about this, that if we knew what made a man tick and why they act like they do sometimes, then we'd understand a lot more how to react to them, and it'd make a big difference in a date life. But before I get to that, I'm going to start out with when not to date. When not to date. The first time, and I'm going to go kind of fast because there's an awful lot I'd love to say in 30 minutes, and we had really planned to be together 30 minutes and do this for 45, so I've got more really that I'm going to be able to give you. So if I go too fast, just slow me down some way, okay? Don't lower your selection. Don't lower your standards if the selection is bad. And sometimes it just is. Now, I mentioned before that you can look in more places than just your immediate group for an eligible Christian date, and I'm going to go later on into how to recognize somebody as good dating material. Sounds rather clinical, but anyway, but if the selection is bad, don't lower your standards. Have them decided beforehand, and then don't lower them. When you're in a situation where you're not dating, though, it's very easy to be jealous of somebody who is. And covering this, I'd say, don't be jealous of the constant dater. If she is a bad girl, you have nothing to want in that, because she's not going to be the type of girl the guys are going to want to marry. Jean Ward says that when a fella has better at home, he doesn't look for margarine somewhere else. And the same thing is true of a guy looking for someone that he wants to marry. He wants the real thing, not a cheap imitation, not somebody he thinks has been well used. So don't ever be jealous of the girl who's dating for what the guys can get. But on the other hand, don't be jealous of the girl who's dating who is a perfectly good Christian, fun-loving girl, and she just seems to have all the dates she can handle. And maybe you're in a time where you're not dating as much right now. Just rejoice with her. Dating is kind of like waves. It kind of goes in waves. And it's much easier if you're in one of those sloughs where you're not dating right now, or you're not dating as much as you'd like to just kind of ride it out. Time will take care of it. Don't try to fight it, because as you know, if any of you have ever lived near the ocean, you try to fight waves and you drown. It's much easier to ride them out, just to kind of float along the top with them and wait till the next wave comes along. And that's really, dating kind of goes like that. Another thing I would put under times when you're not dating as much is don't compare yourself to other people in your spiritual lives. We've been taught this in 1 Corinthians 10:12. Paul says that's an ignorant thing to do, to compare yourself to someone else. You either come up looking pretty good, which leads to spiritual pride, or you come up looking pretty bad, and that's not what God intended for you to do. He wants you to look at Jesus as your standard and just be taking one step at a time with Him. But also don't compare yourselves in dating. Comparison to other people for any reason is a poor habit to get into, because that habit itself carries over into the marriage and makes it a real sticky, bad situation when you have the habit of comparison in your life and you carry it into your marriage, because you almost automatically compare your husband to the neighbor's down the street husband. Oh, look what Joe gave her. Or, oh, look what Bill did for his wife. And you've got the leaky faucet, and the guy next door has already fixed his wife's leaky faucet. And comparison is a terrible thing, terrible habit to get into. So don't start it in your date life, and don't in any area. You know, don't start it in your spiritual life or anything. And while you aren't dating, enjoy that time in your life. Get new hobbies and a new interest. Maybe there's something you've been wanting to do a long time and you just haven't had time to, Well, if you're not dating, make the time to. Take a painting class if that's been your thing, you know, that you've wanted to do, or whatever it is that you wanted to do. And you'll be the more interesting person in the long run for it. So just really enjoy the times that you're not dating. Don't get the what Kent calls the martyr complex. For me, you know, nobody wants to date me. But have a lot of fun. Just use it as an excuse to have some free time and to learn some interesting things and have fun. And you'll be the better off for it. Now, who to date? One thing that may not be such a neat spiritual principle, but it's something I just observed and have for a long time, is that what a friend of mine one time called the beauty on the beach is not necessarily the neatest guy in terms of inward qualities in dating. And what I'm trying to say is what you want is the guy who has the good inward qualities in him. He's the one that's going to make a good dating partner and a good life partner eventually. Not necessarily the beauty on the beach. See, the first thing we're drawn to when we first meet somebody is their looks. But that doesn't indicate what the person is at all. Not for male or female. In fact, in 1 Peter 3, the woman is told, that verses 3 and 4, that her adornment shouldn't be totally what's on the outside, clothes and gold and jewelry, but that the adornment God looks for is a meek and quiet spirit, the inward qualities that are so precious to Him. And this is what we need to look for in our dates also, is the inward qualities. And very often, the fellow who is not the most gorgeous looking, but maybe the one step below that, has had to work on his inward qualities, where the fellow who just looks gorgeous has not had to as much, because he gains attention just because of how he looks. And he hasn't had to spend as much time on the inward qualities. There's always exceptions to that. You know, it's not always true. But it's true enough of the cases that it's a good general thing to know. And I already mentioned not to be too limited to one group, because you're going to meet fellows at work and you're going to meet them at school. You're going to meet them in the area of housing if you're living in apartments or whatever your situation is. And of course, the BSU and the church and different areas that you're in all the time, too. But at least be looking. It doesn't mean a fellow's not a sharp Christian just because he isn't in your church group or your BSU. It may be he's active somewhere else and you just don't know it. When you see a fellow out someplace that you wonder, you know, you don't really know him that well, and you wonder if he isn't, how do you tell whether he's a guy you'd want to date, or how do you tell whether he's a Christian before he asks you out? Most fellas will not ask a girl out who hasn't given him a come on, because a man is built on ego, on his ego, and he does not like rejection. And he very rarely will ever ask a girl out who hasn't given him some sort of a come on, a look or giggle at his jokes overly, or a touch that wasn't necessary, whatever. You know what the come-ons are. And guys wait for those. So if you're kind of watching a guy and you wonder, these are some of the keys you can use to see. For one thing, listen to him. What does he talk about? Is his tone of voice rough? Are his jokes off color? Things like this. Listen to how he talks in a group. Watch how he treats girls in general, because that's how he's going to treat his date in particular. Is he a gentleman to any girl who happens to walk through a door? You know, will he hold it for her? Or does he let it slam back in her face? Things like this. On a first date with a fella, it's a real good idea to ask questions. Not interrogate him. They don't much like that. But enough to be interested in what he's interested in. And they always come away thinking, you're a great conversationalist. Because here they've talked about themselves all evening. But it works every time. In fact, when my husband, still 12 years later, when he comes home from work and he's tired and he's really had a pressured day, and I want to bring him out of that, but I don't want to just throw at him the problems of the day, or we need to make a decision about such and such a child. I don't want to do that to him right off the bat, but I do want to draw him out of this pressured day he's had out in the world. And what I'll do is I'll ask him about the newest Christian record he's bought, which is his hobby, is Christian music, and he's got a big sound system. Or I'll mention that so-and-so called and would love to have a copy of such and such a tape, or something like this. And it gets his mind off the pressure, but not necessarily onto more problem at home, and all of a sudden he's peaceful again. And this works on dates just as well. get them talking about what they're interested in. But in the process of finding out about them, find out about their home life. It's not so easy, hard to do. Where did you come from? Where do you live? Are your, you know, parents there, brothers and sisters? Just in the idea of finding out about them, but be very sensitive as to what he thinks of his mother and how his dad treats his mother. Because a guy tends to reproduce his family, just like you will tend to reproduce your mother's family. And it's kind of a scary thing, but even Proverbs tells us that as a mother is, so is her daughter. That just scares me to death every time I think of it. But it tends to be that way. We tend to recreate in each other strong characteristics. So how his father treats his mother is going to be a good indication to you of what his values are. And know in advance what you want in the man you marry. I talk a lot about making decisions in advance, and I'm real big on this. Because, see, when the time comes and this good-looking guy asks you for a date, but you know his standards aren't really what they should be, instead of vacillating and saying, oh, should I or shouldn't I? Should I or shouldn't I? Well, here's good reasons for, but there's a few. Well, you don't have to go through any of that if you've decided beforehand. It's real easy. You've already made the decision. It just happened to have been made before you met this guy. See? And there's great emotional tension that's lifted by just having made decisions beforehand. And knowing what some of the qualities are in the guy that you want to marry is really helpful. And the way you find these out is do a little study on your own. Look up words like elder, pastor, deacon, things like this in the concordance, because those were the Christian leaders of the early church. And they would have the qualities in their lives that you want in your man, wouldn't they? So look those up and see what the Bible has to say. Now, before I go into a few things about our roles, I want to give you what the differences are in guys and girls. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 differences in guys and girls. And maybe if I don't get it through anything more than just this, it would have been worth this time, I hope. Because so many girls, even married ladies, don't understand their men. They really don't. And they have great conflicts over things that are normal, just because they don't understand. One thing is, a man is objective, and a woman is subjective. A man is made by God to be based on ego, and a woman is made by God to be based on emotion. Now, this one takes a little bit of explaining, because, see, we've got a poor concept of what ego means anyway. We've seen guys that are striving for their rights and they seem to be bossy and always want to want their own way, and we say they're a male chauvinist. And the fact is, let me give you a definition of ego that's much more accurate than probably what you have in your head, just having been brought up in our society. Ego is the instinct God created in man that leads him to do God's will. Exactly what it is. Ego is the instinct that God created in man that leads him to do God's will. And it is interesting to note that there was no sin in the world when God gave this to man. Woman had not yet been created when God gave this to man. And it involves 5 basic drives that God commanded a man to have, and he explained to him how to use them clear back in the Garden of Eden. And I could go into each of these for about an hour, but I'm just going to run over them just to give you a basic idea of how men think. The first one is in Genesis 1:26, when God told Adam to have dominion over everything in the garden, over the beasts, over the planted things, to have dominion. Now, this is, remember, before sin and before woman, for that matter. He gave him a territory, the garden. Now, you've heard of this instinct for territory in animals. Well, we have it too, especially our men do, the instinct for territory, to guard and protect and keep their territory. And Adam had this territory, his garden. And God told him to have authority, complete authority in it. Now, our dates, you know, that all men in the world have this God-given drive. The only problem in college is that the guys are pretty much frustrated in this because they've got the drive, but they don't have the territory yet. See, when he has, later on when he's married, he's going to have a territory in his home. He's also going to have a territory in his work. When he actually settles down to his life work, he will identify strongly with it because it's his territory. see, this drive for authority is what gives men ambition to get ahead in their jobs. And you know what their wives do? They resent the amount of time he's spending at work. Right? Well, you don't know, maybe. But anyway, this drive in a man is God-given. And he is... In college, see, then, it comes across that he's trying to want his own way all the time, or he's being bossy, or he's just over-assertive. No. He's got a drive God gave him that's just now starting to bloom. And he doesn't have a territory to use it on yet. The second drive is in Genesis 1:28. God told Adam to subdue his territory. Now, this is the willingness you see in men to accept challenge. A man loves to solve a problem. That's why we have inventors. That's why we've got the light bulb. That's why we've got 10 jillion things that men have invented, because they had a God-given urge to do it. You have a problem around the house, and your husband couldn't be any happier than if you say, "Honey, such and such has gone wrong. Would you figure out a way to solve that problem?" And boy, he'll work hours. Men have this God-given drive to subdue, to accept challenges, to find the solutions. And because of that, it is a very, not dumb, maybe ignorant woman who will solve a man's problems for him. He doesn't want me to solve his problems. He may want my opinion on the problem. You know, Kent will come home to me and say, "What do you think about this?" But he doesn't want me to say, "I think you should decide." He wants me to say, "Well, honey, maybe this would be an idea to consider." You see? There's a very good working co-relationship there, but it's not... He can still solve his own problems. He has the freedom to do that. So that's another drive men have. In Genesis 1:28 also, God told the man, told Adam to multiply. And this is why men desire a son. You know, have you ever wondered why that is so crazy that the men just go bananas till they have a son? They desire to have a son. Now, I know this isn't applicable to you in your date life. I certainly hope not. But just to help you understand how men think, and you may have seen this in your father or an uncle, of a great urge to have a son. In Genesis 2:15, the fourth command is given to Adam to tend the garden. This means to care for, to upkeep. Now, boy, this really shows in college, guys. How many of the fellas you know will spend hours taking care of a silly old car, and they won't take me out when the best play is on in town? That's they're exercising that God-given desire, that instinct to take care of. But you know, that's wonderful, because you know what they want to take care of when they're married? You and the kids and the house and the yard. It's fantastic if you let them do it, if you let them exercise their drives. Now, it's kind of hard at your age because they're trying to exercise them and they don't have their place yet. But the fact is, you've got drives you're trying to exercise that you don't have your place for either. So you got to give each other some slack. The last drive is in Genesis 2:15, and it's the command to keep, to tend and keep the garden. And this is the urge to protect. The urge to protect. And I'm going to say more about that later on, so I'm going to pass it on here. Okay, let's go back up to the second difference in men and women. The first one is that he's based on ego and I'm based on emotion. And these drives are indicative of his ego, okay? The second difference is that he thinks in concepts. I take things personally. He thinks in concepts. I take things personally. You can see how this would be, because I'm based on emotion, right? And he's based on these drives. I'll give you an example of this. One night we were out on our front porch, and the moon was absolutely gorgeous. You know, it was yellow and round and beautiful and romantic. And I said, "Oh, look at the sky." You know, communication's a funny thing. You really say about six different things. What I mean to say, then what I really do say. You know, I meant to say it's romantic and I love you. What I did say was, "Look at the sky." Then what he hears, "Look at the sky." Then what he thinks he hears, he thought that I was commenting on the weather or something. You know, he's interested in clouds and formations and stuff. So then what he says back to me, which was, "Well, there's some clouds. It might rain tomorrow." So what I think he said, he just thinks about the rain. He doesn't care that it's romantic. He probably doesn't even care about me. I think I am going to cry, which I did. And then what I say back to him, which was, "I'm going in a house." And then what he thinks that I meant was, she has flipped. You know, all these things in communication, which brings me to the point that when you're talking to your fella on a date, mean what you say and say what you mean. Because women tend to beat all around the bush, and they never do get to the bush. This is also why a man cannot take hints. He doesn't think in terms of emotion. Let me cover the third difference here because it's so tied up. Speech conveys facts to a man. Speech conveys feeling to a woman. Let me say that again. It conveys facts to a man, feelings to a woman. See, when I say, oh, it's such a romantic night, I think my tone of voice should tell him that I'm in a romantic mood and I love him, and I want him to say the same thing back. But you know what? Tone of voice carries no meaning to a man. It carries no meaning to a man. It really doesn't. So he can't take hints. He wants the facts. Now, men can train themselves to understand a woman's tone. This comes with a more mature love, with spending time together, and with loving each other enough to be inconvenienced and to really spend time learning about that other one so that you can understand what they say. And in, like after 12 years of marriage, Kent very closely listens to my tone. But the first year, he did not have the foggiest what I was talking about half the time. Now, I didn't know all this. Another difference is a man is logical, a woman's emotional. And right behind that, he is essential-minded, and I am detail-minded. See, he sees the big picture. Here's a good illustration of this, although it's in my world and not yours, and you'll have to excuse me, but Kent will come home and he'll say, honey, let's take a trip to Arkansas next weekend. I say, okay, and to him the issue is settled. The big picture was trip to Arkansas, and that's all done. The whole thing's planned because he said that one sentence. I'm detail-minded. I think, okay, we've got three kids. I've got to get the laundry done by such and such a day, and I wonder if I should take food or whether we'll buy it there. I've got to talk to him about the budget on this. And 6 million details. And see, until we start learning about each other, he doesn't even know why the trip to Arkansas is a big deal to me, because he doesn't think that way. A man identifies with his work, with his life work, and a woman identifies with her home. Now, this is much more to a situation of being married, obviously. But it will explain why a fellow who is serious about his degree will give up dating time in order to make good grades in this area. If his area is biochemistry, for instance, he may not mind flunking out of English unless it has to do with his degree in biochemistry, but he will spend hours in the lab when he could be out walking in the park with me. It doesn't mean he thinks less of me. He's just already identifying with his work, which is the drive for territory that God gave him. And so he's already fitting right in beautifully with God's plan for him, and I'm just bucking him the whole way, you know. Not intentionally. It's just that most of us don't understand the way the guys think. And these real quickly said facts will not necessarily give you the ability to understand what your date is thinking unless you take these situations and go back through this when it happens and say, well, I bet this is what he's really doing. See, he doesn't necessarily have this all figured out. He's going on instinct. But we can figure it out and react properly to him and not take things so personally when he didn't mean for them to be, which is what women tend to do. Now, that's all I'm going to give you on the differences. That'll be enough to keep you busy for a while. But I kind of wish somebody had given those to me when I was first dating. It takes a while to assimilate all that, but you'll be amazed when you're on dates and a fellow will say something or do something, and you'll already have it figured out why he did that, when maybe before it would have been a source of conflict. So I hope that helps. Another part of dating, which I've just kind of generally labeled my part, didn't know what else to label it. I'm trying to get too many ideas into too concise a time here, I realize. But one thing is that Kent's going to be talking a lot to the fellas on consideration. And is showing us the consideration of being romantic and the details that girls appreciate. On the other hand, we as girls create the atmosphere of our dates. We really do. You can tell how much it is within a woman's power to create an atmosphere if you'll think back to your home life or watch your mom when you are home. I know in my own home, if he comes in from work and he's had a tough day or an easy day, it doesn't matter what, but he comes in and the house is in chaos and the kids are running everywhere and the music's too loud and the dinner isn't ready yet, he just kind of goes to pieces. He gets grouchy and irritable. If the kids come in from school and I'm saying, hurry, hurry, we got to go here, we got to go, errands to do, you know, grab a snack and let's go, the whole rest of the afternoon is shot. Or if I am real flustered about something or real nervous or anything like that, it is contagious. It carries over. Because that's the power a woman has to influence emotions around her. But if, on the other hand, the kids come home and I've got a snack ready and there's quiet music on in the background, they just kind of settle down after school and their whole mental attitude to clear to bedtime is different. It's a peaceful home. And I could do the same thing for my husband. Women do set the atmosphere. A man sets the direction, but a woman sets the atmosphere and the attitude. And it's true on dates and it's true in the home. It's true in the office. If you work in a clerical job, for instance, in an office with men, we just have this inbuilt capacity, just like the men have inbuilt instincts. This is one of them that's inbuilt in us. So on dates, we really do set the atmosphere in the air. And one way we can do this is by being feminine. There's a lot of ways to be feminine that our society has kind of taken away from us. One of them is clothing, of course. And my rule of thumb always has been to wear something that he can't duplicate. It may be a texture of clothing, you know, something real flimsy and pretty that a guy wouldn't be seen dead in, or a certain color, or, of course, a skirt the guy isn't going to try to wear. But even then, you know, a lot of our woman's fashions now are very tailored, and we wear the vested suits, you know, that if the skirt was pants, they could just about wear. And I've got one like that that's kind of a brown outfit. And so I always wear just a real flimsy, sheer blue, baby blue blouse and a little thing at the neck and anything that he can't duplicate, because the more feminine I look, the more masculine he feels. And avoid fads that don't flatter you. This was a trap I always fell into. Anything that was the latest fad, I didn't have much money for clothes, but I wanted at least one little thing of it. And I would look horrible half the time because I'm short and I have a tendency to look 5x5 and I've got to be very careful what I wear. So avoid fads that don't flatter you. He will really treat you, and it's very subconscious, but he'll treat you like the doll that you appear to be. And dolls are real fragile, you know. They break real easy, and it's amazing how much more care and gentlemanly qualities come out in a guy who's out with a very feminine-looking girl. And, of course, in the way that we act, we can be feminine. I've told married ladies, if you want a king, you know, we've got these ideas of our knights in shining armor and the king of his home and all this. Well, if you want a king, you've got to act like a queen. And if you want a knight in shining armor, you've got to be a lady in distress. Now, let me explain that a little bit. In a book I read one time when I was younger, the lady said, "Don't kill your own spiders." And that stuck with me. Don't kill your own spiders. You know, we have a tendency, just because of the world we live in, to be so independent that we come across with the air of, I can take care of myself in any situation. I'm just self-sufficient. Well, that just kills his instinct to protect and care for right there. And what sense is there in his having to be careful of me and treat me in a very gentlemanly, sweet way if I've got the whole thing controlled? You see what I mean? You don't look like you see what I mean. Sometimes we have to be appropriately helpless, if that makes sense. There are some situations that we actually are not independent, are we? We want to be taken care of. We want doors open for us, and we want all these little things. So we need to let him see enough of that side of us that it encourages him, his instinct to care for and to protect. Part of a woman's beauty is her need to be protected at times, and there's nothing weak about letting him see that. It encourages in him the things that in the long run we want from our man. I know when you get closer to marriage, you think of your fella not in terms of your date as much as what you want him to be, your lover. But he can't be those qualities that you imagine you want in a lover if you have not created that air for yourself that he has his natural instincts awakened to care for and to love. So you do set the atmosphere. And I think that a guy enjoys somebody who sets an atmosphere of being real fiery and fun-loving, as well as being in good taste. It doesn't mean I have to be a little Pollyanna and so sweetie, and but guys do like a fun-loving, fiery girl. Just whatever your personality is, there's a guy who really does like that, just exactly like you are. So you can be yourself, and you can be honest, and still be in good taste, and be able to communicate with him and talk about him, with him about your feelings, because you're just being you. You're not putting on any sort of a false air or mask. That's very dangerous. Sometimes we try to do that to impress a certain guy that we'd like to have a date with, so we act a little bit different than what we really are. We act more like what we think he would like to see in a girl. Well, that's super dangerous, because what if he falls in love with that girl I've created and I'm not her? And what happens when that has to fall? When the situation comes up that mask cracks and I've created something that he's fallen in love with and it wasn't really me. And that may sound like it wouldn't happen, but it happens all the time. You think back to your high school days and how many most popular guys married the most popular girls who lived on the basis of the image they had created. And their marriages don't last because of that one thing. So be yourself. Be as fun-loving as you want to be and have a good time dating. But be yourself and be honest with him and communicate with him. Talk with him about things, about how you feel and how you really are. You can make him a gentleman also by your manner. And, for instance, standing at a car door until he opens it. Well, the first time I tried that, it was a disaster. I stood at the car door all right, and he went to the driver's side and got in. And I just stood there, talked to him through the window. It sounds like it was a very artificial situation, but it really wasn't, because it took him all of a third of a second to get the idea. And I never had broken the conversation. We just kept talking about whatever it was we were talking about. There was never a break, never an embarrassing silence. He jumped right back out and got the door for me, and away we went. There's never a thing said. And he was the neatest guy to date from that point on. Because he knew, you know, they're kind of like kids. You know, if you expect the best of them, they really do come through. But that is really true. You know, you've seen children where if a child is told too often, "You're just stupid," then they begin thinking, "I'm just stupid." And they're pretty soon they are. They become what is expected of them. And it's true, because we're all in some stage of a growing process all our life. And we will be what is expected of us to be. So if you expect the best of him, that's what he'll be. It's not that our fellas don't know these things. It's just that they're not used to using their knowledge because they've never had a girl expected of them before. And it is really fun when they come through and you're enjoying your role as a date and he is too. Another thing I'd say is in expecting the best of him is expect planned dates. A lot of trouble in the physical relationship comes when we don't expect planned dates and we kind of ramble around not knowing where we're going and end up parking. And not that there's all, well, that's a whole new subject, but I give a 3-hour talk every year to the ninth graders at our church on dating. It's been eighth graders now. They're starting to date younger. And one of the things I tell them is that I am not ignorant. I know you're going to park, and we talk a lot about the physical relationship in dating, and I suggest to them at their age that they ask their parents for a safe place to park. Now, that may sound dumb, but actually their parents know they're going to, and they know they're going to, and so what they do is they drive out to the lake and get ambushed or something, or go too far because with the physical relationship because they're out someplace they shouldn't be. If they're in their own living room at home or parking in the car in front of their house, they're not going to go as far. They're going to be secure and safe, and the parents are going to trust them more. So that's what I tell them. So I'm not ignoring the fact that parking is involved. But expect planned dates, because you have a lot more trouble in that area if you don't. And if he says, for you to give him an idea, don't ever say, "I don't care." You ought to care. And he doesn't ask you for an idea if it isn't that he doesn't need one. Because remember what I said, they're based on ego. They don't want to be rejected. They don't want a negative answer. So if he asks you for an idea, have one. And when you're on a date with a fella, for instance, if you're driving down the road and you see a marquee of a movie and you say something to the effect that, "I've heard that is a really good movie. I'd love to see that." Don't dwell a whole lot on it. Just keep right on going. It's a conversation. That's not a hint. It's a direct remark. And you'd be amazed how they'll pick up on things that would please you and you're interested in. And then that makes it easier for them to be creative and to please you. So there's nothing wrong with giving ideas as you go along to help your date out. On the other hand, don't make federal issues of them. He may hate that movie. But suggest things you enjoy and then appreciate his efforts for you verbally. Really tell him. Now, this goes under the heading of communication, which you can tell Kent and I are very big on, but learning to talk is an art. And so many times we think we're communicating through hints or through a look or through an attitude or through a tone of voice that he's not even catching. So learning to communicate is really one of the things that that dating is most basically good for. So it's a matter of the will in advance before emotion gets stirred is the whole idea. To make decisions in advance and then communicate with him while you're on dates. And, of course, Jesus really must be the center of your life for all of this to work. Otherwise, the whole thing is too idealistic, just like it sounds. But it isn't if Jesus is the center of your life.